happy Wednesday. Welcome back to Aces Up the Sleeve. Wow, it's been a while since I have said that. I think officially we are safe to call this the kickoff of our new season of the audio podcast. I think that's safe
sure.
to say.
Yeah, we'll call it season two, I guess. Because
I think it's three now, because we had season two.
Three.
Yeah.
We didn't have a real long break the last time, though. Today, yeah. This time, we just kind of fell off the face of the planet for a little bit. But hey, we're back.
So as you guys have heard, I am Patty. I'm co-hosting with the co-managing partner of Pocket Aces Racing, or Par for the quick reference, Jared Shoemaker. And we're back on our little podcast where we shed light on all things to do with the syndicate. We're going to talk about syndicate ownership. We're going to discuss what you guys have asked us to talk about. We're going to talk about the industry at large because we are industry participants. And this time, as we like to do, we love our interviews. So we're going to jump right back in with an interview with trainer Jade Cunningham, who is one of the sport's newer trainers. She started saddling her own runners back in 2023. And in this episode, we're going to sit down with her. We're going to talk about what got her into racing. I know we've had a lot of questions about this as well, but her time with the late, great Dwayne Lucas and her time as an assistant trainer with Dale Stewart. We're going to talk about what it was and the nerves of going out on your own and maybe some of her memories, some of her favorite moments, some favorite memories from the industry. And also, we've also had a significant number, well, not significant, but quite a few fan and partner questions that Jade, if you would be so kind, we'll have you answer at the end, kind of when we start winding down. But first and foremost, how are you doing today, Jade? And thanks for coming on and talking with us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm super, super happy to be here.
Thank you. Jared.
Well, yeah, again, thanks so much for joining us, being our first guest back here in our new season. And, looking forward to spending a little time with you, hearing about your past and your present and what you got going on in the future. And just looking forward to get to know you a little bit better. And again, just really appreciate the time that you're giving us, because I know most trainers don't have a whole lot of extra time to give.
Yeah, it's I got a good crew, so that helps.
Good.
That's awesome. So, I mean, then let's kick off right back into like kind of our traditional question of what got you into racing? Like, it's, you know, we call ourselves a little a get to know your neighbors type of podcast. So what got you into racing?
Yeah, my mother remarried to a jockey and then she trained for a while. So I've been on the track since I was about 11 years old. Actually hated the track until I started galloping. And then when I started galloping, then I just fell in love with the sport and the horses and went to college. And after graduating college, my family had stepped off the track. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll try to step off too. And it just straight up was not for me. I was like, no. My heart's definitely on the back of a racehorse. So let me get back there as quickly as possible.
Fair. I feel like a lot of people make that comment too. I tried to get out. And then it pulled me back in.
Just sucks you right back in every time.
I swear.
Impossible to leave. So what's your mother's name and the jockey she was married to or is married to?
Dia Williams, and she married R.D. Williams, who used to ride like Nebraska, Exarban, places like that. They met at Turfway Park.
Turfway Park. Boy, yes. That place has changed a lot, hasn't it?
Yeah, I actually have not been back. I ran two there last year, but I just shipped them up. I didn't even go, but I haven't actually been back since I was like 12 years old. So haven't even seen it.
Yeah,
I believe you.
It's it's interesting place now. There's not really a grandstand, which is kind of some people lament that it's tough to just show up and go down and watch races, but they got a beautiful big new dining room, and that's a pretty nice place to watch races. But you're definitely, unless you go out to the paddock, there's not a whole lot of room for you to get too cold out there during the winter. So and the paddock looks pretty much the same.
I was going to say they didn't change that very much.
Didn't change the paddock at all. They didn't haven't done much with the barns yet, the rest of the place looks brand new. So when did you start riding? I assume you started riding for your mother.
No, Danny Pish actually. Stepdad did put me on my first racehorse on the track. But actually, Danny Pish literally the next day, took me under his wing. His assistant, Jasmine Daniels, was a good friend of mine. So Danny and Jasmine taught me how to gallop. Danny's got a pretty Western style about him. So a ton of horsemanship underneath him. So he was willing to teach me slow and started putting me on joggers and then just taught me a lot about horsemanship and riding a racehorse as opposed to just Western horses.
And now, any thoughts ever of going down the jockey path or just strictly you went from exercise riding and then you wanted to be a trainer?
I had always wanted to train in some capacity, horses of some form. My mom ran a riding stable for a while, and I would always kind of be drawn to the bad horse and be like, oh, I can fix this one, and you can put a beginner on this one. Like, right. If you'll give me 2 months with this horse, you'll have a beginner on this horse. Things like that. So I always have been drawn to the training aspect of it and never wanted to ride. I don't really like the starting gates, still don't really like the starting gates. And I really love donuts, so never had the desire to ride, which worked out. So just went straight towards the training path.
And that's, so how long were you a rider, exercise rider?
I started when I was 17, and I still do it. So
you still do it. Okay, so you get on your own in the mornings.
I do. Okay. Yes, sir.
Very cool.
But no gate training, though.
No gates.
No, actually, I do. I do. Actually, I broke. Actually, my horse last year that finished second in the grade two, I'm the one who taught him how to break out of the gate. So I do it, and Wayne made me fairly good at it. I just don't like it.
Yeah, just not you'll do it if you have to.
Yeah. Straight up not a fan.
Yeah, well, okay, I got you. Very good. So you and Wayne was your first assistant training job?
No, so Danny Pish was.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so Danny let me, so I started galloping at 17. By 19, he was letting me run his shed row at Lone Star with 50 head of horses.
Oh, wow.
He said, yeah, crazy man. No, he said that he said I had someone that had a bunch of faith in me when I was young and they probably shouldn't have. And now he said that he does it for other people and he absolutely did that for me. So I worked for Danny for 7 years. And then I went to college. Like I said, I stepped away from the track for about a year and a half. And then when I came back on the track, I was like, I don't really want to go Oklahoma, Texas. If I'm going to stay on the track, I'd like to go to Kentucky. So ended up in Kentucky working for Wayne. I actually just exercised for Wayne and then I shipped to Preakness with him and saddled at Oaklawn. But he, of course, had Sebastian, who had been his longtime assistant for like 25 years. So he didn't need an assistant.
Okay.
But he is the one who got me the job with, or helped put in a good word for me to be the assistant for Dallas Stewart.
Gotcha. So, I mean, obviously Wayne had a ton of phenomenal horses over the years and your time riding for him. Who are some of the, who are some of your favorites and who are some of the best that, that you rode in the mornings?
Yeah, I got none of the good ones. So
No,
I actually...
Well, who are some of the favorites then?
Actually, one of my favorites' name was my favorite uncle, and he ended up running for like $5,000 at a lower level track. He never broke his maiden while I was around. But the reason he was one of my favorites is because he was a very intimidating horse. He was an Uncle Mo, and you'd walk out the barn at Churchill and he'd go straight up on his hind legs. And so everyone was like, I am not riding this horse. And Wayne was like, well, Jade, that means he's yours. And I was like, okay, sounds good, boss. But I ended up getting along with him and the horse taught me a lot. So that was great. And then I did, like I said, I did go to Preakness with him, but I went with a horse named Ram, which was really, really awesome. He won a race on Derby Day and on the undercard. And when he won that day, Wayne decided to send him to Preakness and he told me I'd be the one to go with him. So nice horses. I just wasn't around for like Seize the Gray or Secret Oath. They were after me. I was with Dallas at that point.
So now a friend of mine, and she has passed now, but she bred a filly named Raggedy Annie that Wayne had for the Churchill Downs Racing Club.
Oh, okay.
Did you have
No, I was not around for that.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's that's just one that I you know stood out to me because I knew the lady that bred her and was involved and you know her sister is still a you know really good friend of mine and she was involved in with that filly and so anyway, I thought you might but you know Dallas Stewart when did you go to work for Dallas?
I would have to think about years. I guess
roundabout. You've been on your own for about 2 years now.
Roundabout. Yeah, I mean, it would have been, I guess, five years ago. So just from Wayne, I had like a summer in between Wayne and Dallas, and then, like I said, Dallas let me gallop, and then Wayne was like, she would probably be good enough to go to Oaklawn. To my understanding, that's what Wayne said happened, which Wayne likes to take credit for things, so who knows. But I do know that Dallas went from having me gallop and then just immediately was like, hey, like you're going to take a whole string to Oaklawn by yourself. So
gotcha.
That was pretty exciting. So we had a horse on the Derby Trail that year, so that was super exciting.
You have worked for two real, and I don't know Danny Pish, but I mean, I know the name, I know who he is.
Yeah, I recognize his name as well.
Yeah, But Wayne and Dallas Stewart, I mean, that's two pretty big characters that you worked with there.
Absolutely. Yes. Very. Yeah. Yes. They,
there's got to be some good stories from each one of them from just sitting around in the mornings and or just talking horses. Anything stand out to you that just were like, okay, let's, you know, that's just too good to forget. You'd like to pass along.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch with Wayne, right? That was a sure. huge part of Wayne's personality. But actually, one of my favorites is the day I went to get the job with Wayne. They walked me up, and I knew his gallop girl at the time, Danielle Rozier. And they walked me up, and Danielle's like, "Hey, he's on the phone. Give us just a second." I was like, "All right." So he gets off the phone, and he walks out, and he looks me up and down, and he goes, "I'm 5'9". And he goes, "Is this giraffe looking thing supposed to gallop for me?"
Oh no.
Said, "Yes, sir." And so I always think about that. We reminded him, he said that one time. He said, "I didn't say that." I was like, "Yes, you did." Oh, every bit. Yes, you did.
In his defense, he was older. Maybe, you know, a little forgetful.
I don't think so. He just didn't want to admit it. But no, he was great. He always had little comments like that. But of course is huge character. So yeah, both of them, him and Dallas. So good guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, if anybody said anything like that about your height, I'd have been like, gee, Tashawn Parker's 5'10" and he's riding and winning races every day. I don't know how.
Not for Wayne Lucas. He was.
Well, not for Wayne Lucas. That's fair. But still, I mean, that dude, every time I see him and I see him curled up on the back of a horse, it just blows me away.
Yeah.
Anybody that long can do what he does.
That was Joseph O'Brien at like 6'2", trying to ride in the Breeders' Cup, and we were like, "Oh my goodness, how?" Yeah.
So, yeah. Talk about that transition from you know, you've left Wayne and gone to be an assistant for Dallas. You got your string at Oaklawn, yeah, and then you know you're an assistant for Dallas for I guess a couple years.
Yes.
What prompted you to say, okay, I'm here with a pretty, you know, I've had a pretty good run here with two incredible trainers, but now I'm ready. What was that? Just talk to us about that decision and just that process of leaving Dallas and then and setting out your own shingles, so to speak.
Yeah. So that's not at all how it went. Actually, I was very much unintentionally forced into it. But the reality is I kind of made some bad decisions and the Lord was like, "Oh, actually I'm trying to get you to go out on your own." So, my mom had a little bit of a health scare. So I stepped away from Dallas. I was like, "Hey Dallas, I'm going to go kind of handle this." And when I started looking back, they ended up handling it and she was okay. So when I started looking back towards going on the track, I was like, "Okay, well, Dallas wasn't going to come back to Oaklawn. I had bought a house at Oaklawn," or to my understandings, he wasn't coming back that year. And so, which he's coming back this year, but he didn't come last year, the year before that. Anyway, so I bought a house at Oaklawn. So I was like, okay, what am I kind of going to do? I want to go back to Oaklawn, you know, just kind of in my own head. And I was like, well, I don't know anything about the claim game because, of course, Wayne nor Dallas claim. And I was like, right. If I'm going to start training, I need to know how to claim. So I ended up working for someone who had just kind of started who claims. And I worked there for about a month. And I was like, wow, I am busting my butt. And I'm not, you know, I'm just an assistant, which is fine. But I loved working for Dallas. Like, Dallas and Wayne were amazing. Danny as well. But I was like, if I can't work for Dallas, it's just time for me to go back out on my own. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even really reach back out to Dallas. I was just like, okay, well, I am going to, when this person no longer needs me, I'm going to tell them I'm going to step away. And when I'm going to pack up all my stuff and I am just going to drive to Kentucky. There's a sale next week. I'm going to go and start talking to owners. I'm going to drive to Kentucky. I'll get a Gallup job, whatever. So the trainer was like, you're good, no worries, go ahead and go. So I packed up all my stuff, went to Saratoga, saw my friends there for 24 hours and started driving back towards Kentucky. And as I was driving back towards Kentucky, Kevin Horton called me and asked me what I was doing. And I told him I was on the way from New Jersey to Kentucky. And he said, okay, I want you to go get Forever Dreaming from Wayne. Wayne doesn't want to train this filly anymore. And I said, well, let me call Wayne. And if Wayne says it's okay, then I'll go get her. So I called Wayne and Wayne said, Jade, I don't think it's a good decision for you to take this filly. There's a reason I won't train her. However, I will not be offended if you want to come get this filly. I said, well, boss, I'm going to come get the filly. Then I just need to say I'm training a horse. Right. Because once you say, you know, I'm training a horse, then I can start calling other owners and tell them I'm out of my own training. So went and got that filly. And I had one horse for maybe a month. And then fell into another owner that had actually known me from Danny Pish, Susan Moulton, and she sent me a filly. And then Horton ended up sending me a few horses and just kind of a trickle-in thing, right? And then Horton pulled all the horses to go to a private trainer. So then I had one horse. And then I emailed the guy, Charles Jennings, and was like, hey, I used to work for Dallas. Like, I know you. I watched you for a while. Would you claim a horse with me? And then he started claiming horses with me. He's one of my main supporters. And so every step of it was totally a God thing. None of it made sense. I mean, the normal story you hear is I worked for Dwayne Lucas for 15 years. He sent me off with one of his owners, and now I'm training on my own, right? Like, that's the Dallas Stewart story. That's the Mike Maker story. That's a story, and mine's just, like, undeniably God-led, because, honestly, it was by stupid decisions that I made that I actually would not suggest for someone else to make.
Right. So, you know, you work for three very successful trainers in one capacity or another. And Danny and Dallas and Wayne, and now you're out on your own. And so talk to us a little bit about, you know, what did you pick up from Wayne that's like, that just stuck with you forever and that you made it part of your process? And what about with Dallas? Is there something that stuck with you that's part of your process? And same with Danny, or is it just, You tweaked a little bit of a lot of things they did, or you know, what's that look like for you?
I mean, I think you start with the foundation of the people you worked under, and fortunately, like you said, the three main ones that I worked under have been very successful in what they do and the areas that they specifically specialize in. For me, I feel like Wayne was a fantastic businessman. And so I tried really hard to ask him a bunch of the questions in regards to owners and the business side of things and how you present yourself. Dallas and Danny are both great horsemen. I've learned a lot. My training regimen's pretty close to Dallas's. There's still some Danny Pish in there. Danny's pretty specialized specifically to every horse. And so it's kind of just a mix of all of them together, but I definitely have taken big notes from every one of them and have put it into my system as well.
Gotcha. So now Forever Dreaming was your first horse that you claim or that you trained.
Yes.
Was that your first winner as well?
Oh, no. No, no, no.
Nope. Okay.
No, no, no. She was a funny horse. She was actually a really cool horse to have. But she actually, the reason I got old Forever Dreaming is she refused to gallop around a racetrack. So she, we ended
That's
up
kind of
training.
A problem for a thoroughbred.
Yeah. So we ended up, we were at Ellis Park, and we ended up sneaking over the hill and training in a field. And so she did run two races for me, and she did end up training back on the track, getting back where she would train on the track. But she took a lot of effort, and she gave me what she had, but she didn't have much left.
Gotcha.
My first winner was actually a horse named Spankster, which was a horse that I had for Dallas when I was his assistant as a two-year-old. And so when I was going through the transition of trying to find horses and trying to find owners, and Horton had decided to go to a private trainer, I was standing there with two horses in my barn, and I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do now? Like, I had five, now I have two, what am I going to do? So I actually just started looking up horses that I was like, maybe I can just buy a horse somewhere. You know, you kind of panic when you don't do this correctly and you don't get kind of given an owner to go out on your own. Like, you're kind of sitting there in a panic, you know? And I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? So I just started looking up horses I knew. And I actually, to be totally honest, like, Spankster was not really a horse that I remembered because I liked the way he galloped. Like, he was kind of irritating to gallop as a two-year-old, and he was kind of mean in the stall and all these things. But I just, his name had stuck out to me, and I remembered it. So I looked him up, and I was like, man, this horse is running dead last for $25,000 in Florida. I was like, this horse should not be doing that. I was like, man, they're running this horse at a mile. This horse doesn't run a mile. And I just really started looking over his past performances and stuff. And I was like, for Dallas and Wayne, this horse is running in stakes races. And like, the best he ever did in a stakes was fourth, but broke his maiden special weight. Like, this was a nicer horse.
Yeah, running the Whitmore, the Commonwealth, the Smile Sprint, all grade threes. I mean, and then some stakes at Churchill, Ellis. I mean, absolutely.
So I was like, why is this horse running dead last? I was like, man, this horse isn't breaking out the gates the way it used to break. And I was like, ah, heck, I'm going to see if I can find this horse. So I ended up reaching out to the trainer on Facebook, and I was like, hey, do you know where the Spankster horse is? Because he hadn't done anything in 2 months. No work tab, no race.
Whoop.
He's like, I couldn't get any run out of that horse. I sent him to the farm. And I said, would you mind sending me the owner's phone number? And he didn't reply to that. So I just got on the little Google machine and just started looking around. And
find it yourself.
So I did, and called him, and he was a little less than thrilled to hear from someone, but he was pretty done with the horse at the time. And he's like, you know, get him off, literally, like, you can get him for this much, but get him off my property by Saturday. And so I called up a van company, and I was like, get down there and get this horse. And so at the time, of course, I had no money. So I went in a partnership with Terry Westmeyer, who knew me from Oklahoma, and my parents had actually broke babies for him. So he was very willing to help. And he's like, Jade, if you think this horse has something, I'm willing to, you know, give you a leg up. And he still has been like that. Terry's been awesome. But of course, so Spankster ended up winning my first race here at Oaklawn, my first year training.
Starter allowance, nice big purse, $65,000.
Yes. Super cool.
I just hopped on Equibase. I had to check it all out.
Yeah, he's been a really cool horse. And one of my good friends rode him that day. And then, of course, he went on to win one at Churchill. Ended up second in the Claiming Crown. He's been a really, really, really cool horse to have. And his story is really cool to me because it relates back to me having him with Dallas. And he also will be the last Wayne Lucas horse I'll ever train. So he's been a really, really awesome horse to have.
Not a whole lot of masteries still running around out there.
New,
no. But not too many. So that's probably, so that's, you know, I was going to say who's your favorite horse, but it's probably him. Isn't it?
It is Spankster. Yeah. And I own 50%. So that's actually right. Somebody the other day was on the horse that finished second in the grade two for me. And they're like, is this your favorite horse? And I was like, so while he probably should be, no, it's Spankster.
So what was your grade two runner up?
Grade two was Gateskeeper.
Tell us a little bit about that horse.
Yeah, so he finished second in parks. I can't think of the month off the top of my head, to be totally honest with you. But he's been a really cool horse. He won a maiden special weight here on Arkansas Derby Day for Gervais Racing, who also has horses with Dallas. And we literally got him for $36,000 in a digital sale. Another owner that was just like, Jade, I'm going to give you a leg up. And I was like, listen, I found this horse in this digital sale. Instagrams have been doing really good. What do you think about giving this horse a shot? And he's like, sure, we'll watch it. And we paid $36,000 for him, and he has made over $200,000. We've campaigned for the grade two, so we're giving him a little break right now, but he's been an awesome horse to have.
Very cool. So have you bought many out of the digital sales? Because I'll be honest with you. When the digital sales became prevalent a few years back, Mark Wampler and I, the horse part of our partnership, we were very doubtful that anything was ever going to become out of these digital sales. And I have been completely blown away by
the
dollars that they're bringing out of horses.
Online shopping, like, friends.
Who's going to buy a horse without ever seeing it? And apparently, though, it's quite the thing. We've even bought a couple out of which I never imagined we'd do. But so, what other experiences have you had with digital sales? Just while we're talking about that,
yeah. So I'll get to that. But I think we actually had a lot of luck with Gateskeeper because that was almost like the first. I think it was the first year of the digital sale, and so no one was watching. Like you said, no one was paying attention. There is no way we would. I mean, we obviously, because of that horse, we watch all the digital sales now. And horses with any, there's no way that horse would go for 36 now, even without the prodigies that Instagram has now produced. If it was the same situation, there's no way. So that
even a sniff of black type lands you solidly in like the 200,000 range now.
Yes. So I think that ended up working out. But that being said, to be honest with you, like, a gorgeous horse, but probably if we would have seen him in person, his confirmation's not, you know, maybe as great as you'd, you know, if you're going to spend $200,000, which for 36 is perfect. So it just kind of depends, but he's been awesome. So we also bought a horse named Natural Rights. He has not debuted for me yet. He's actually supposed to be my first debut horse here at Oaklawn. We bought him in the digital sale, but that's my only other one we've gotten from the digital sale. So we're still waiting to see how that one pans out. Hopefully just as well. Hopefully we got another graded stakes horse. Yeah.
Third time lucky.
So, yeah. Yeah, I'm just kind of looking down the list of questions, and I think I know all the answers to these already. So, because I think you've kind of shared with them already. You know, we were going to talk about your son, your favorite racing related moment as a trainer. It got to be that first win, or even is it maybe saddling up your first on your own? Because that had to be pretty special too.
There's so many. The first one was huge. So 7 months, I didn't even hit the board. And literally the same day, I got a third and then I won. So I was just like, okay, finally, which of course I hadn't ran that many, but it felt like, you know, when you first start, you're like, okay, I've got to make a name for myself so people can see me and can see what I can do and know that I'm just as capable as the people I'm coming after, you know. Sure. And so 7 months feels like an eternity. So it was very, very, very exciting when Spankster won that race. But the grade two, the second in the Gallant Bob was just also just over the moon. And Randy Gervais, which is the son to the partnership of Gervais Racing, was with me. And it was just a very special moment because, again, they've been with me since I started and been a huge supporter. And it was also their first graded stake placing, and they have horses with Dallas, and they've had some very successful horses with Dallas. So for it to be me, it was really special and really exciting. So that was definitely one as well. And I think saddling goes, I think one of my favorites was the first time I saddled for Wayne and then saddling at Preakness for Wayne.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That had to have been incredible. Like, we talk about the classics, and it's very well covered on TV. But it is a beast of its own design to actually be there and experience all of it for yourself. Like, there's something the TV can't quite translate for people who watch.
Oh, yeah, no, yes, absolutely. Just walking up and seeing, like, the huge Preakness sign as you're walking down the track, and it's definitely something special. And also, Wayne was really funny. I asked him to let me saddle for maybe 4 months before he finally let me. And the first time I saddled, it went great. The second time, I saddled a horse named Cold as Hell, and he was an orangutan in the paddock, and I forgot the pommel pad, the green and white pad. I went to put the saddle before the pommel pad, and Wayne got so mad at me, and he was like, just move, I'll just do it myself. And I was like, no, I'm gonna finish this, like, you're just gonna have to chill. Mostly because the horse was like trying to murder everyone, and I was like, I can't, this can't be how Wayne Lucas goes out, because I can't get the horse saddled, you know. So I was like, no, I'm gonna finish this. So I got him saddled and everything went well, but my point behind that is Wayne's very particular about his saddling. Like, I've been saddling for a very long time, and he was very uncomfortable with me saddling him for a while. And then, of course, he sends me on to Preakness to saddle Ram, and when I go to tighten up the girth, the valet was not holding on to the top of the saddle like he was supposed to. And when I pulled the girth at Preakness for Dwayne Lucas, the saddle just slid right off of Ram and hit the ground. And I was like, man, Wayne is about to yell at me. And I look over and Wayne's like, man, what's that valet doing? And I was like, oh, thank God.
Like, okay, somebody okay. else is the target this time. Like,
perfect. Yeah.
Thank goodness perfect. He was paying attention, right?
That's right.
That's great. So now, do you claim many horses now, or are you primarily just training horses that owners send you, or you are kind of in the claiming game a little bit?
I'm definitely in the claiming game a little bit, a pretty good mixture of both. Wayne always kind of cautioned me to not come a full-on claim trainer. Mm-hmm. It's such a convenient way for owners right now to get a horse quickly. But I really love having the opportunity to get the best out of a horse, and that takes time. So I really love getting a horse either as a 2-year-old or a first-time 3-year-old, such as Gateskeeper, and being able to figure out what the horse needs, as opposed to having to put them in for a tag, probably lose them, and not really take the time to get the best that I feel like I can. So I prefer to focus on the horses and the owners that'll allow me to have the time to get the best out of a horse. I mean, Spankster's a great example of that for me and my barn. Gateskeeper as well. But we still claim. I've claimed a couple at Churchill, and they're here with me. So.
So how many horses do you have right now?
I have 10 right now.
Where would you like to be? Or I mean, do you have aspirations of having horses at 5 different tracks and 300 horses that you're responsible for? Or you like that 20 to 30 range, or do you just want to see what the world brings your way?
So I kept being like, I want to be a Dallas Stewart, and 20 to 30 would be great. At this current moment in my career, I actually have downsized intentionally a little bit. I really love being hands-on. I like galloping on myself. I like being hands-on. I like feeling what they're doing. I like knowing if they ate, if they didn't eat, how their legs are, you know, and there's a way to do that with 20 and 30, but I can't gallop them obviously with 20 right. and 30. So right now I've actually kind of intentionally downsized a touch so that I can be just very hands-on and really focus on the quality of the horse and the quality that I myself am giving my owners. So as of right now, I'm really happy with the around the 10 mark.
So you ride every single horse every morning?
I do, yes, sir.
That's impressive.
It's really nice to hear how many, like, young up-and-coming trainers and horsemen and women who are leaning more into the, like, I want to see these horses develop. Like, I want to be able to say I brought out the best of that horse. It's really nice to hear, because I think for a long time we were worried in the industry that we were just pushing them so fast to get through their conditions that nobody was really slowing down to think about the horse themselves. And so it's like, so to hear you say that, and then I know when we, Jared, when we talk to Ethan, and he's like, yeah, I ride all of them, as many as I can. Like, it's so cool to see more and more horse people choosing to do that and choosing to have that connection with their horses.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, he's kind of got that mix where he's probably got about 25 or 30 horses, and he can't get on all of them every morning, but he's on all of them every week. And so I think there's a lot to that. You know, we're with a couple of different trainers, and hey, maybe another one coming up here sometime soon. After talking to Jade here, we'll have to see about that. But you know, I think I really like there's a key. You can be a big trainer, you can be a big, have a big operation, but you got to have people in the barn that are good enough to be out there training on their own, and they're just content to be an assistant, and they're the ones that are hands on all the time. Or you got to be like Jade, you know, Ethan West, Susan, that are hands on their horses all the time, every day. And it's I think there's, it's a good approach. I like it. So Jade, we had several partners that submitted questions for you. You've answered a couple of them with some Lucas funny stories and good sense of humor and calling you a giraffe. John had asked about your preference of training young horses or older horses, and you kind of gone over that. And you also, before, you know, without even talking about it, Gary asked about, you know, what do you feel was the best advice you got from Dwayne Lucas? And, you know, you talked about his advice that he gave you from a, you know, a business standpoint. Any other really solid nuggets that you remember from Dwayne or Dallas, either way?
I think, you know, it's kind of one of those things that you don't think about them until you're like doing something, and then right. It pops up and you're like, oh, this is what Dallas said, or this is what Wayne said. Of course, Wayne used to quote, one of these days I'm going to remember this other coach's name, but today is not the day that I'm going to do that. But I want to say it's a famous football coach, but it's, we don't do things right some of the time, we do things right all of the time. Winning isn't a sometimes thing, it's an all the times thing.
Okay.
And
this sounds like he'd be a football coach.
Yeah. And it's just like his attention to detail, and like everything matters, all the details matter. Be paying attention to those details, because it's the little things that get you to the winner's circle. And so in my opinion, especially in a barn like mine, and so that always resonates with me and sticks with me, of just trying to be super mindful of everything and not being like, oh, that's, you know, I'm tired, that's not a big deal today. Like, it probably is a big deal.
No such thing as a half-assed effort, right?
Yes.
The last question that we had is from Brad. He mentioned that, I guess, you know, he'd read, we sent some articles when we were talking, you know, kind of previewing this to the partners, that that you had mentioned your faith a fair amount, and how it's helped you traverse your career. And he asked, as you ride your horse, do you feel the presence of God with you as you're going around the track? And how does, just in general, your faith keep you focused on what you're doing day in, day out? And how is that, how has your faith impacted your career?
I would say I definitely feel his presence as I'm going around the track, but I feel his presence in Walmart, you know, like, yeah. It doesn't have to be like a climactic experience, right, for me to feel him, you know. But I, as I said, everything in my career specifically has been absolutely God-led, because the decisions I have made are like, if somebody sat down and was like, Jade, how'd you become a trainer and can I follow your path? I'd be like, how's your walk with the Lord?
Because get good.
I've just honestly made some really less than great decisions, and the Lord has been faithful regardless of that, and has used amazing people like Dallas and Wayne and Danny to push me forward and send people my way regardless of those poor decisions. And even from like a horse like Spangster, like that makes no sense either, that I have a horse that was in, and I mean, the horse is about to be 7 and he's still running pretty well.
Oh, you ran a huge race last out.
Huge race at Churchill. Yes, sir. Yeah. So it completely impacts my career in a positive way. Trusting in the Lord.
you've mentioned a couple times questionable decisions, but you know, and I'm not going to ask you what those are. It's none of my business. But don't you think though that sometimes those bad decisions that you make in life turn out to be some of the best because you learn the most from them?
So yes, but I think what I'm getting at is if I was completely on my own, the lesson would have to be a lot harder. Because for example, I told you that I stepped away from Dallas because my mom had a health scare, mm-hmm. which is very true. But the way I stepped away from Dallas was just like a panicked, oh my God, I'm probably not going to come back. I've got to go, blah, 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 you know? And then I, in a normal sense, the door would have just been closed. And I didn't go back and work for Dallas. I went and worked for someone in New Jersey and all of that. But when I came back, like, Dallas has been one of my main supporters and just very encouraging. Anytime an owner comes to him and asks about me, he's like, yeah, she knows what she's doing. She's great. She works hard. All she needs is horses. You give her the horse, she's going to do it. And there's, and that maybe that's just talks about Dallas's character, because he does have a great character. But I have done that with multiple things in my life of just like a panicked, oh my gosh, like I've got to fix this myself. And fortunately, the fall should be a lot harder than what's happened in my life. And I personally give credit to the Lord just being really faithful, because there's so many bridges that should be burned down that actually have been bridges to get me where I was going.
So I think that, to me, that says a lot about your character, quite frankly, that you know, in normal circumstances, that the bridges might have been burned, but they see enough in you and they've seen enough from you that, you know, maybe they realize there were extenuating circumstances there, and so they're willing and very happy to give you a second chance. And I think that says, in addition to saying something about them, I think it does say a lot about you. So, all right. So our last question, and this is one we ask everybody, I want you to think, imagine for a minute that you're queen for a day in North American thoroughbred horse racing. What is one change or one tweak or whatever that you would love to see implemented?
And it's a tough question, so don't feel bad if you don't immediately have an answer.
I mean, I think there's a bunch of different ways you could go with that. I think some of the harder things we have a lot of people working very hard on, and we've seen improvements slowly but surely, and that I'm very grateful for. I'm grateful for state vets that are working very hard to make it safer for the horses, and trainers that are implementing different protocols in their barn, but to go a completely different direction, I wish that there was like an online rundown for entries because you enter your horse and then you trust that the entry clerk took it, which they always have, so I can't technically say anything about that. And then if you want to know if the race is going to go or not, you have to call back up there. And I really wish there was a way to just look at it on my phone.
Okay. All right.
And to know that my entry was for sure done.
As an owner, I can get behind that too, because a lot of times I'm sitting, especially down at Gulfstream, where I swear there must be on about a 6-hour delay behind everybody else, because entries are going
so
on. And you are, it's like 7 o'clock at night and they still haven't put out the overnights or released entries yet. And you're like, what in the world is going on?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm with you. I like that. And we need to put our thinking caps on and see about making that happen.
There you go. Full support. I'll help.
Well, Jade, thank you so much for your time, for your candidness, and really appreciate you taking a little time out of your busy, busy schedule. Best of luck at Oaklawn. I guess, have they taken entries for the first
Have you called yet to find out?
Have I called up? December 5th is the first day of entries. December 12th is the first day of racing.
Gotcha. So yeah, I think we've got one down there right now. But yeah, we've won one race at Oaklawn. We have not had a ton of luck at Oaklawn over the years.
Oaklawn is difficult. I mean, everywhere it's hard to win anywhere, but Oaklawn is difficult.
Yeah, it's tough, and I wish they had a turf track.
Yep.
But part of the issue, part of the problem, at least that we've had, I think, at Oaklawn is that, you know, it's south, but it's not so far south that you completely get out of all the freezing weather.
Oh yeah, so last year I was having a good meet, and then we went through the freeze, and then you almost start from scratch. You know, like your horses aren't fit, and you're having to go back over, and then the races aren't coming back that you needed, and yeah, it can be very difficult. So I could definitely see you guys having to deal with that.
Yep. So, but anyway, best of luck down there this year, and then I guess you'll be back in Kentucky in the spring.
Yes, sir.
All right. Very good. Well, I. Hopefully we will get to meet face to face here one of these days. And again, best of luck through the winter, and thank you so much.
Thank you guys. I appreciate it. If you come down to Oaklawn, come say hi.
Absolutely. Yes. We'll do.
Thank you. Thank you. And thanks everybody for tuning in this week. Make sure that you're subscribed to any of the channels that you can find this podcast on. I know our Castaws homepage, where I post the links to this homepage, has all of our episodes. So if you're curious or you want to listen back to one of your favorites, you'll be able to do that on our Castaws homepage. That is where this podcast lives. Also, please make sure that you are subscribed to our social media pages. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're on Threads. It's Pocket Aces Racing. Also, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel under the same name. And hit the bell to get notifications, so when those little videos start going up and they start going live, we'll have, I think, two or three of them that we've kind of got plans, and we're going to start recording on those pretty soon. So make sure that you're subscribed over there and that you're getting notifications for when those go live. And as I tell everybody every Wednesday, have a happy Wednesday. Have a good Wednesday. Make good choices.
That's for you, Jade. Make good choices.
Yeah. Make good choices.
Make good choices, Jade. And the podcast is out.